On this episode of the Green Street Beat, we're talking with Lee Summit Police Sergeant Brad Anders.
You know, addiction's one of those things that it's there. It's going to get you, no matter if you make $1 million a year, if you're making $50,000 a year, it's there. Nobody's immune to this.
We discussed the department's new program called Safe Passage, which is aimed at helping those dealing with addiction. We also talk about trends the department is seeing and what kind of impact this program is already having. Let's dive in. I'm joined today by Lee Summit Police Sergeant Brad Anders. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We're talking about a very important program today that the police department recently launched called Safe Passage. Can you explain a little bit about how that program came to be?
Sure. So I do some work on the side outside of law enforcement, and I work for a company called National Development Research Institute, USA, NDRA, USA. We have an office out of Leawood, but they're based out of New York. Back in 2016, I got an email from one of our grant coordinators that talked about an opioid treatment program, police-assisted program. So I read through it, and I thought, you know, this is great. This has Lee Summit written all over it. This is something that we would do in this city as far as being proactive of trying to address certain problems. So I brought it up to my command staff. They're like, yeah, go ahead and work on it and see where it goes. And essentially what the program is if you have somebody that's addicted to not just opioids, and that's kind of one of the things that we did different here in Lee Summit, the program was originally designed to address opioid addiction. But we have much more than that here in Lee Summit. We have, you know, methamphetamine's always been a problem here, alcoholism, whatever the case may be. So we wanted to address addiction in general. So essentially what the program is, if you decide that you're ready to take that step and move towards sobriety, you are welcome to come into the police department and speak with one of our CIT officers, our crisis intervention team officers, and ask them about the Safe Passage program. And what we'll do at that point is we fill out some paperwork. We haven't been running anybody, so we're not overly concerned about anything that you've done at this point. The most important element is trying to get you into some kind of a treatment program. And we've worked on the front end with Rediscover and First Call. And Rediscover's really been pivotal to get this off the ground. They've opened up their assessment and triage center there at 12th and Prospect to get it to allow Lee Summit Police Department to use it. So once they're screened in, we essentially take them from the police lobby and we'll drive them to KCATC at 12th and Prospect. We'll drop them off and they will get them into any kind of treatment program that they individualize for each of the subjects that come in and use. One of the good elements about this, and we've had a couple people come in and actually take advantage of this, is you're welcome to turn over any of your product or any of your paraphernalia. And we've had some people do that so far, which I was really happy to see. But you have the promise that there's never going to be any charge to come from that. So any kind of substance that you bring in, whether it's heroin, whether it's methamphetamine or pills, needles, pipes, we take that and we mark that for destruction, never to be seen again, and you'll never hear of it again. So if you wanted to get rid of, you know, that sort of temptation that may be in your home, we're here to do that as well.
And this program is modeled off of a program that was developed in Massachusetts. It's kind of, the idea has spread across the United States now. Is Lee Summit the first police department in Missouri to develop this kind of program?
Lee Summit is the first that I know of that has a program like this. Now, we partnered up with PAARIUSA.org. It's Police Assisted Addiction Recovery Initiative. It's a 501c3 based out on the East Coast. And essentially, you can become a member of this nonprofit, or you can just join up and say, hey, I'd like to be associated with you. And with that membership comes some other benefits. You have access to over 300 different mental health service providers throughout the country. We're able to, if necessary, get scholarships for transportation to get somebody to a treatment program, whether it be out of state, even if they don't have insurance. And that insurance thing has been probably a great thing. Most of the people that have come through so far have not had insurance, but Rediscover is willing to take them on anyway. But Rolla PD was also a member of PAARIUSA, but I don't know if they've had their program up and running. Ours is the only one that I know of that's up and running.
And I noticed, too, a lot of other departments, they've developed their own twist, I guess you could say, on these types of programs. And some, the one Lee Summit has and the one that was developed in Massachusetts, is kind of voluntarily come to the police department and we'll get you the help we want. Some other police departments have decided to be a little more proactive and actually, if they know of someone who has suffered an overdose in the recent past, they'll go out and reach out to them, still not threatening charges or anything, but just offering help to someone that they know recently overdosed. Is that a kind of a path that this program could take in Lee Summit in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we had 1,000 of those trifolds printed out, and we've given them to every officer. And the idea is if they go to an overdose call, and obviously we're not going to make an arrest there because of the Good Samaritan laws and that sort of thing, but we can leave this literature and say, hey, here's some literature. If you decide that this is right for you or you want to start taking a step towards getting better, then here's some information, and you're more than welcome to take advantage of it. I'd also like to see the fire department, and I've spoken with Chief Eden a few times about getting the fire department on board, and they're more than willing as well. Sometimes they go to those calls. Well, they always go if there's going to be an overdose, and they can hand out the literature as well. It's just another avenue to get the program out there to where people understand that it's an option for them.
So how long has this program been running in Lee Summit so far, and what have the results been like?
We launched August 1st of this year, so it's only been running for about 2.5 months so far. Right off the bat, we really had a lot of people come through the first couple weeks. It's died off a little bit, but I'm still pretty thrilled with the results. We're creeping up on that 30 number of how many people have come through to seek help with the Safe Passage program. I believe we're at about 26 or 27. I think we had our 27th maybe Tuesday. What is today? Yeah, it would have been last Friday, I think, was our last one that we brought through. So the response has been great. You know, it hasn't overwhelmed Rediscover or anything like that. The really neat thing, though, is a lot of other people have come forward and wanting to be a part of it. Journey Pure, Comprehensive Mental Health, you know, all of these people have come and said, hey, this sounds like a wonderful program. Here's another option. This is something that if you know, Rediscover possibly can't help you, then we have these facilities that are open and available to you anytime that you need. And some of them are out of state. You know, some of them require insurance. Some of them don't require insurance. But again, it's just it's been really wonderful to see how everybody's coming together to try to make this program a success.
And I think it is important to emphasize this is a voluntary program and that you won't be facing charges if you come asking for help. But how does it work if, say, someone comes for help and they had previous charges or a warrant out for their arrest? How does that work?
So at this point, we're not running anybody for warrants. We're under no obligation to do that if they walk into the lobby of the police department. We just don't necessarily do that for those that we contact. We don't run everybody that we come into contact with. I've also worked with our Jackson County prosecutor system and our local prosecutor system, and they're all 100% on board with this. They think that this is an excellent program, and I've yet to have anybody that's not willing to work with somebody in a position like that. Now, if they come in with an egregious, like murder warrant or something like that, that's something a little different. But you're looking at Part 1 crimes that are pretty severe, and you can't just turn your back on at that point. Aside from that, it seems, again, that everybody's 100% on board.
And some of the case studies that I have read said that in communities that had these programs, that overall drug charge arrests dropped dramatically, and in some cases are very rare now because of these that find treatment for people who need help instead of trying to charge them for crimes.
That's really the goal, you know, and hopefully time will tell if that is the case in Lee Summit, and our fingers are crossed, and we're hoping that we can address addiction in a different way as opposed to handcuffing it.
And I was looking at the numbers earlier today about opioid overdoses just overall, 2001 to 2017, which was the last year available for the data. And it's been a steady increase. There are a few dips in there, but overall, a pretty steady climb. Is that a trend you're seeing in Lee Summit, just an overall rise in opioids?
Yeah, we've had a steady increase since 2014, roughly 30 to 40% every year with our increase in opioid-related calls for service. Fire department has seen the same with their Narcan administration. The police officers in Lee Summit just received Narcan late last year. So we're now able to go out and do that as well. But prior to that, the fire department was the only option to administer Narcan, and we have the nasal sprays that we can use now. And we've used it a few times as law enforcement officers, but the fire department really is who we rely on to triage these people and get them to where they need to be after the fact.
And when I was looking at Missouri's, it showed from 2016 to 2017, heroin overdoses actually dropped, but non-heroin opioids rose. Is that something else that we're seeing, more non-heroin opioids?
So I haven't ran the stats for this year, but as of 2018, we were still seeing a rise in heroin, but we would still see more opioids in general, like the pills, your oxys and your hydrocodones and tramadols, that sort of thing. We would see more of those, but the heroin itself is still on the rise.
And when I was looking at the numbers as well, I noticed that there's a perception substance abuse tends to be higher with younger adults, and it is the highest for ages 25 to 34, but it's still really high for people who are 35 to even 64. So it's not just younger people who are struggling. It can be any age group, any race, any gender. It's kind of across the board.
Right. It knows no demographic at all. You know, addiction is one of those things that it's there. It's going to get you, no matter if you make $1 million a year, if you're making $50,000 a year, it's there. Nobody's immune to this. And when you start with something that might have been completely innocent with a prescription for an injury you may have had or an operation or some kind of medical procedure that you may have had, and next thing you know, you're getting off of it and starting to find yourself getting sick. That cycle just starts, and it's so easy. Opioids are extremely, extremely addictive, as we've seen with some of the current legislation that's come out, at least some of the cases, like with Purdue pharmacies. You know, there was some misinformation on the front end of whether or not these things were highly addictive or not. And as we've seen now in our second, likely third opioid crisis in the history of this country, that was really at the root of it.
And some departments have struggled because these types of programs require staffing, they require time, energy. So how many police officers are trained to handle these sorts of cases when they come into the department asking for help?
So I've trained all of our CIT officers in this, and I'm sorry, I don't have the exact number of how many CIT officers we have. We have more CIT officers than we have non-CIT officers walking on the road. So as far as patrol officers go, there's a good majority of those that are stationed or listed as patrol officers that can handle these calls. And it's nothing that another officer couldn't do. There's really not a super special training about it. It's a simple, we've been streamlining the process where it takes literally about 45 minutes from the time you walk in to the time that we're in front of KCATC. So we streamline that process fairly quickly. And soon enough, we'll go to where everybody will be able to do this as opposed to just the CIT officers. I chose the CIT officers to begin with because I thought it might be an easier sell. As these kind of programs, when they're new, sometimes get a little bit of a, I don't like this. This isn't, it's new, but it's not, some people don't think that that's police work. This isn't our job. And I'm not saying that we have that here, but in general, that would likely be a response from a few. And I had hoped that going to the CIT officers, they would be much more receptive to the idea, thinking that, hey, if I do this on the front end, this will likely, help somebody on the back end, and as in turn, decrease my calls for service and having to deal with somebody that's constantly either overdosing on heroin or overdosing on opioids or, involved in the drug trade or whatnot.
Help is available all day, every day. It's not just normal business hours. It's
24/7.
24/7. So I wanted to talk a little bit about your background as well. How long have you been with Lee Summit Police Department, and how did your career in law enforcement start?
I started my career in 2002 at Sedalia Police Department. I worked there starting as a patrolman, field training officer, and then went into a canine unit. Absolutely loved it there. The opportunity presented itself to move to a larger agency, better pay, more things for me to do as far as getting out and off patrol, going to the detective unit, possibly getting into motorcycle units, things like that. It just sounded like, hey, this might be time to move on. So in 2009, I was hired with Lee Summit Police Department, and I worked patrol for 2 years, and then I created what's now known as our crime reduction team, And I did that in 2011, and we started in 2012, and I worked from 2012 till 2016 in our crime reduction team, and then moved into narcotics, specifically our special investigations unit that's geared primarily towards drug investigations. And this is when I really started to work on that program while I was in the detective unit, and then got promoted to sergeant when I would say it was about a year and a half ago, July of 2018, and I've been back on the road as a patrol sergeant, but now I'm been selected to go supervise that team that I made back in 2011. So it's kind of done a 180 here, or done a complete 360. I'm right back where I was, but I'm just now the supervisor of that unit.
You're actually a doctor too. You have your PhD in criminal justice. What made you want to pursue that?
You know, it's kind of tough to answer that. Because I was not a fan of school. I mean, obviously, going through high school, I couldn't wait to get out of it. First go around at college, it was more of just party time than not paying attention to what I should be doing. But the more I decided I wanted to actually be a police officer, I went back and got my 4-year degree before I was hired in Sedalia, and I really enjoyed learning about, you know, criminal justice. I enjoyed learning about some of the other aspects that, other than just going out and policing. I wanted to know about the theories. I wanted to know maybe why crime is occurring in this place and not in this place and things like that. So I went on for my master's degree and really loved it. And at that point, I said, well, the heck with it. I'm already this far. Let's go ahead and go in debt for the rest of my life. And went and got into a doctoral program and, again, focused on criminal justice. And I really am glad I did it. I think if I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it 150%. So this is going to be my career till the day I retire. I love the career. I think it's the best one out there. And I just wanted to be able to know what I'm doing a little bit better, if that makes sense.
And you've gone from someone who never really liked school to now being a professor. So can you talk a little bit about that role in your spare time?
I started an adjunct professor role at State Fair Community College, and where I actually went there for my associate's degree way back in late 90s. And I knew the criminal justice chair was an ex-police officer from Sedalia. So I thought, hey, you know, I think this would be fun to try. I'll give it a shot. And I did. And at that point, I was in the middle of my doctoral program, and I wasn't paying anything back. So I enjoyed the teaching. I really enjoyed the face-to-face interaction with students. But then the bill came, you know, so I was like, so I'm going to have to do something to supplement this income to pay this thing off, this piece of paper. And so I started applying for online adjunct positions, and I got picked up with Southern New Hampshire University. And they've been really great as far as, and it's an online master's degree course. And I think the only thing I've really taught there so far is just the same class over and over, and it's critical issues in criminal justice. And this is a wonderful class. And the students that I'm working with at Southern New Hampshire are above and beyond some of the others that I have in some other online colleges that I've done as I've performed as an adjunct. And it's really been a great experience to make an impact on some. I've had FBI agents that are in there. I've had people that are Secret Service agents in there as students, and working with professionals that I'm like, wow. And then to get an email from them like, hey, you really made an impact. I'm like, what are you talking about? That's awesome. But wow.
I was going
to
say,
it really makes you feel great.
Yeah, that has to be really rewarding to be able to influence the next generation of law enforcement, no matter if they go into a local police force or a federal force.
Right. And I still get emails from students from the past, whether it be at State Fair Community College or one of the other online or Southern New Hampshire, that ask for, you know, things like letters of recommendation. It always makes me feel good to do that, to play a role in getting into their full-time career, something to use their education.
Well, thanks for taking the time to be here.
Thank you, Eric.
Thanks for listening. As always, if you enjoyed it, share it on social media. Help spread the word. Also, send your comments and ideas for future topics to communications@cityofls.net.